your very best shot and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
All right, Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Bullseye again. We're going to talk some NBA basketball today, some modern-day real NBA basketball. Really looking forward to this discussion, including a little bit of talk on the Bulls' first two preseason games, along with exploring the rest of the Central Division. Tim, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Fred. A little bit of fall in the air here in San Diego. Probably not quite like you've got it in the Midwest, but yeah, looking forward to autumn.
Amen. A lot of Cubs talk here with the game tonight. So a lot of excitement on that front. But really looking forward, obviously, to the Bulls season two starting up shortly. And we've actually had two preseason games. I'd like to get your opinion on something that's kind of a hot topic on Twitter, which I really, somewhat angered me. And to follow up, in case you didn't see, Nico Vučević had a pretty awful first two games, and he was absolutely buried on Twitter. I mean, just, you know, the guy sucks, zero trash, he's done. Call me crazy, Tim, but isn't it a little bit insane to take that next step and basically call Nico a piece of garbage because he had two awful games in the preseason? I just think it's absolutely ludicrous. So I'd like to get your take on that, you know, two awful games so far in the preseason, and general impressions of the team based on what you've seen so far.
Well, sure, and I know since I've been coming on the podcast with you for a year and a half or so, you know, tried to maybe give a less emotional perspective on the Bulls because I know, especially in the world of immediate feedback and commentary through social media, that you know, there's I think a very quick reaction sometimes to everything, not just how Nico played in two preseason games, which, again, my thought is, hey, let's let this thing breathe a little bit. There's a lot of pieces that are, you know, that are being integrated in this new Bulls lineup, right? I mean, you know, Rose and Noah, foundations of the team for quite some time, although obviously there were injuries and missing in action segments of that, but to replace that core, so to speak, with a new core of some veterans and then just the development of some of these young players and getting them to play together, I think it is a big overreaction. I thought Nico played pretty well last year coming back from the injury and when he had the appendicitis, and I thought he showed some promise that, you know, late in the season. Thought he played pretty decent with Spain in the Olympics. So, yeah, I just think there needs to be some time to let this take shape a little bit.
No, I completely agree. And I'm not saying, you know, there's reason for concern overall. You know, he hasn't shown a tremendous amount of progression into what we would hope to be a very good, you know, all-star caliber player. But to me, the most important aspect of his game is being a stretch four and being able to hit the three and opening up the lanes for, you know, the guys like Rondo and Wade and Butler on this team. And last year he shot 39% from three. That's a massive improvement based on his rookie year, which he shot 31%. So if he keeps on progressing like that and shooting the three and being able to open up the lanes, that's really all I care about when it comes to Nico Mirotić. I don't expect him to be an all-star. I don't expect him to be, you know, a superstar in this league. That's what I want him to do for this team is to hit threes. And if he can do that at a 39% rate, I'm all on board with Nico Mirotić.
Right, and I'm with you on that. I don't ever envision him as an all-star either. The other thing I think with him, certainly being able to stretch the floor from the four spot, but also seeing him run the court. You know, he had that nice dunk on the pass from Rondo. So he can get up and down the court a little bit too. So not only bringing a four that isn't really a wing or perimeter type player defensively away from the basket, but he should be able to outrun those fours as well and get out in the open court. And it looks like from what I've seen so far of the Bulls in this limited action so far is they are getting more steals and pushing the ball a little bit and playing at a little more fast tempo. And I think Nico either sprinting the floor and getting to the three-point line or getting to the rim and finishing in transition is something else he's going to need to do as well.
Amen. So why don't we get into a little bit, do you have any other general thoughts about the team overall over these first two games and what you've seen? I mean, it's kind of hard to me to make really grand proclamations when, you know, Wade, their best players have been so limited minutes-wise, but I'm pleasantly encouraged by what I've seen, and with the exception of Denzel's injury, which I think is really, really a shame, you know, because the kid, I thought, played really well up until that point. But
right.
Hopefully he'll be back soon.
Right.
That is general impressions.
Right. That is a little bit of a setback. Well, and then Dinwiddie had a nice game against Indiana. And, you know, I think he showed, again, is he going to be able to do that consistently? I'm not sure. Is he even, you know, for sure going to make the team and get minutes? I'm not sure. But that was encouraging to see the way he played. One thing I noticed in that comeback in the first preseason game against Milwaukee is that just the positive energy on the bench and seeing Wade on the bench on his feet, standing, cheering for his teammates, and just seeming to enjoy what was going on out there, even though he was not in the game. But just that kind of encouragement and positivity and professionalism, I think, is going to set a great tone for the team throughout the season. A couple other quick observations in general on the Bulls were, I think Robin Lopez is going to become a big fan favorite of the Bulls because of his blue-collar approach and just doing the dirty work in the post. And, he's not going to be able to shoot the ball like Gasol. We really got spoiled, I think, with Pau Gasol hitting that shot from the foul line or beyond. Lopez isn't a shooter quite to that level, but he can hit that little mid-range jumper or hit it often enough. You know, somebody penetrates and kicks it back to him. But just his control of the paint, I think, is going to be a real positive. The other thing, I thought Doug McDermott looked much more athletic and just bursty on the floor. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be considered an elite athlete in the league, but I think his athleticism, to me, is noticeably improved year over year. We all know he can knock down threes with the best of them, but just seeing the variety of shots he hit against Milwaukee, floaters, left-handed shots, reverse layups, so just his versatility and improved athleticism, I think, looks very encouraging to me as well.
I agree. And to touch on that point, I said one of the biggest problems with the Bulls over the last few years has been their inability to recognize who has the hot hand in getting that player the ball. And I thought last year that happened a tremendous amount where, you know, Doug had it going. Doug started hitting some shots, and then he would go four or five possessions without seeing it because it was Derek's turn or it was Jimmy's turn. And I think that nonsense is going to stop with Rondo running the point. I was really, really impressed with the way Rondo handled the ball and some of the passes that he had over the last two games. So I don't know if you feel the same way, but just that mere fact of finding the guy with the hot hand is kind of like an underrated trait of the best teams. And that's something the Bulls have failed in miserably over the last few years.
Right. Well, and Rondo's a master at passing the ball and led the league in assists last year. So very recently has proven he can get the ball to scorers and get the ball to the people. And that's on Sacramento, a pretty bad team with some questionable players in that lineup. Yeah, I would just advise the listeners to really keep a close eye on watching Rondo play the game. I think he's one of the more fascinating players that's ever played. In terms of, I find myself running the DVR back several times a game with him, saying, "Did he do what I just think he did?" And, you know, he makes very complex plays look very easy, or he adds a little bit of a flair to something that, you know, maybe most players would either not even try, or it would, you know, maybe look very, very conventional, but he's able to add a little something extra to it. So keep a really close eye on all the little things that Rondo does, because he does it so smoothly and in the flow of the game that it goes unnoticed on a lot of occasions. Kind of things like Ginobili has done over his career, where if you look closely, did he do what I just think he did? You know, and it's after looking at it a second or a third time, you realize that incredible athleticism and talent and vision and creativity that these guys have.
Agreed. You know, and the Bulls are 0-2 so far. I'm not losing any sleep. I am somewhat concerned about one factor with this team, and it has to do with defensively. You know, all their young guys in that core that are going to be their primary players off the bench, for the most part, are kind of like offensively orientated. You know, with Doug McDermott, I'd say Portis is that way. Probably even you would argue Valentine. They're upsides on that side of the ball, the offensive side. Not a lot of great athletic defensive stoppers on the team, unless I'm missing out, really. You know, it seems to me their best defensive players, like a guy like Taj or Lopez, are all a little bit older and you know, I'm probably on the other side of their prime. What say you on that point?
Right. Well, certainly for interior defense, it is Lopez and Taj for sure. You know, I think Portis maybe isn't so much a defensive presence, but I just really like the way he rebounds the ball. He seems to be always around the ball. And so maybe he's not a stopper, you know, so to speak, defensively, but his ability to rebound, I think, is something that they're going to need to leverage. Yes, as far as the defensive end of the floor, I think they're a little bit aged in that standpoint, like you mentioned. Obviously, Taj and Lopez are still kind of in the midpoint of their careers, but Rondo and Wade are certainly more toward the tail end of it. So even though as athletic and intuitive as they are defensively, the ability to get steals and deflections, you know, their age is a bit of a factor. So I think you're right. Some of the young guys are not where they could be, need to be defensively. I think for someone like McDermott, it's not due to lack of effort and focus, but yeah. And again, some of these opponents, you know, who's going to guard some of these guys anyway, right? When you're trying to guard Kyrie Irving or LeBron or Curry or Klay Thompson, I don't see Durant. You don't see many people stopping those guys, regardless of their age or athleticism or ability. So, but I think you're right. I think, you know, in closing out games where the defensive end of the court is going to be critical, I think they do need to find that right mix of who to have on the floor, who's the best group to get some stops at crunch time.
Yeah, I've always felt like, you know, the interior D is the most important, and I think they're fine with Lopez and Taj. I mean, I think those two guys are really good at cleaning up the mess. I think they'll be fine with those two, but if one of those guys gets hurt and misses an extended period of time, I think the drop-off defensively is pretty severe from that point to the front court, you know, players and Nico and guys like that, who I just don't think are anywhere near as good as those two. But, you know, we'll see what happens. If they can remain healthy, I think it's going to be a rock-solid year. Let's now turn to the division. And I'd like to get you some capsules on each team in the Central Division. Get your take on these teams that we're going to be competing with. Why don't we start from the worst to the first in your estimates, and let's go through each team.
Got it. All right, well, we'll start at number five, and I think it's a pretty solid division top to bottom in terms of just coaching and instability, I guess you'd say, of the franchises, certainly compared to some other teams or other divisions. But at number five, I've got the Pacers. Now, last year they were 45 and 37, which I think they really overachieved with that, and Frank Vogel, I think, did a masterful job again, but it wasn't enough for him to keep his job. Larry Bird had seen enough, and in his own kind of backhanded way, I think Bird complimented Vogel as he was going out the door, and obviously Vogel landed quite quickly in Orlando. Nate McMillan's now the head coach in Indiana, who I think is a very competent coach. He'd been successful other places, and I was frankly surprised he didn't land a job before this. He was on the staff of the Pacers, but there were a number of job openings, obviously, every year. There are a number of them in the league, and I was sort of surprised Nate McMillan's name wasn't presented more often. So, but I think that transition from Vogel to McMillan, even though McMillan was on the staff, I think there is going to be a little bit of a drop-off there, and I really do feel like they overachieved. You know, they had a couple of interesting acquisitions. They picked up Jeff Teague and Al Jefferson. Although with Al Jefferson, I just don't know how much gas is left in that tank. He's had some injuries and bounced around to quite a few teams. So, again, if you're counting on him as your low-post guy, you know, I'm not sure that that's a playoff, you know, bound team.
Yeah, good luck.
And with Teague, he seemed to really drop off in Atlanta, and I don't know if there were some things going on in the locker room or, you know, I saw him really kind of lose interest or almost give up in certain games with the Hawks last year, and I know they were kind of grooming Dennis Schroeder to fill in it more and more at the point guard, but something wasn't right with him. Maybe going back home to Indianapolis, which is his hometown, will infuse some energy into him. But I don't really see that as an upgrade from George Hill. I was a pretty big George Hill fan from his days at the Spurs, and then I thought played very solidly with the Pacers. And he's now moved on to the Jazz. You know, Paul George, I would say, is obviously a star. You know, behind LeBron, the second best player, I would say, in the Central Division. And I think the emergence of Miles Turner as a rookie last year, I thought he was one of the real sleepers in the draft and very impressive as a developing player. And, you know, probably it will be the Al Jefferson or better as his career emerges, but not quite there yet, just in his second year. And he only played 1 year at the University of Texas. So I think with the coaching change and the shift in the roster, which I don't see as a big upgrade, they're going to have a little bit of a drop-off, and I see them at 38 and 44. Now, obviously with Larry Bird in the front office, and he's got to answer to him, who's one of the more intense competitors ever, so you know they're going to compete every night, but I think with all the factors of coaching change and some of those roster moves, I don't see them achieving what they did last year.
Completely agree with you on the Teague over Hill call. I mean, I think Teague's one of the most overrated players in this league. I didn't think he was any – I mean, he had a couple nice years with Atlanta, no denying that, but Atlanta had a lot of solid players around him, really rock-solid players, you know, especially when they added Korver and a couple other players. I just felt like – I never felt like Teague was, like, elite of the elite point guards, and now he's replacing Hill, who's – Hill's definitely better defender. You know, we'll see how it works out for him, but I always thought he's a little bit more me-first scoring type as opposed to Phil, who was, I thought, a little bit better team player and definitely better defender.
Right. Well, I remember being somewhat surprised when he made the All-Star team in the East, where if he was a point guard in the Western Conference, there's probably 7 or 8 point guards better than him, and you'd take over him in the Western Conference. So he benefited, I think, from being in the East and obviously still in the East with Indiana, but so that's my pick and prediction for the Pacers at number 5. So next on the list, I have the Bucks at number 4. Now, they were 33 and 48 last year. There were some injuries and some setbacks for them after a pretty promising season, I thought, 2 years ago. But I think they will be improved this year. But going from 33 and 48, I've got them getting 6 more wins this year. So I have them at 39 wins. So a little bit of an improvement. But Chris Middleton's out, I believe, for the season, who's, you know, certainly one of their best players, if not, you know, maybe their second or third best player. So a key player in their lineup is out.
Are you sure he's out for the year? Oh, my gosh. I had no idea he was out that long. I thought he was out for, like, 3 months.
Well, I know it's an extended time. I know it was hamstring surgery, so I know it's a lengthy period of time. It may not be for the season. We'll have to confirm that. But either way, an extended amount of time. You know, I think Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, is ready to explode as one of the next superstars in the league.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a couple seasons under his belt. Just seeing his length and athleticism and the things he can do, getting to the rim, his shot is really smoothed out, and he's a player that I think those comparisons to Durant are legitimate. you know, when you see someone like Brandon Ingram being compared to Durant, I think that's a big mistake to even put him in that category. But Antetokounmpo, I see it, and I can see it happening soon, you know, as he continues to develop. Despite all that, you know, they do have some interesting length and athleticism, you know, late in games when they have that lineup where Michael Carter-Williams is the smallest guy on the floor, and he's probably, what, 6'6", 6'7", as a point guard and has some length. You've got John Henson, Jabari Parker, Greg Monroe. But I just don't see the firepower offensively. And so even though I think they're going to improve over last year, I only see them at 6 more wins. And so they're a little bit ahead of the Pacers.
Agreed completely. And the guy, to me, who's the problem on that team is Michael Carter-Williams. I never liked this guy. I can't stand guys that can't shoot it. And he's absolutely zero risk. You want that guy shooting all day from the outside. You just pack it in, let him do whatever he wants out there. And, you know, I completely agree. He's the guy. They need to upgrade him. They can upgrade through, and there's, you know, a great free agent class for point guards. If they can somehow, you know, either do that, either via trade or free agency, I really like their team improving greatly. But Michael Carter-Williams, I've never been a fan. I think he's a bum.
Well, I won't make a big argument on that with you. So so that takes us to the number three slot in the Central Division, and I've got the Detroit Pistons there. Now, I thought they overachieved quite a bit last year as well, and I think they're one of the teams that probably benefited. I know they had a couple wins against the Bulls when the Bulls were very depleted with injuries, and I really felt like even though the Pistons got in the playoffs last year, I thought the Bulls had a better team than Detroit. But obviously, Detroit got it done. They had 44 wins last year. I see them having a slight drop-off. You know, Stan Van Gundy obviously is a very competent coach and been successful in the league a couple of different places, you know, a proven winner, I guess you'd say. But speaking of injuries, I don't know if you saw Reggie Jackson is out with knee problems for, I think, at least a couple of months. So that's
going to be
So that's a step back for them. And I guess you're kind of seeing some of these other teams feeling some of the pain the Bulls have had you know, with injuries over the years. So, you know, losing Jackson for them would be, I'd say, the equivalent of the last few years of the Bulls losing Rose for extended periods of time. And you know that you know, that's not boded well for success for Chicago. So I think replacing him is going to be tough. The other thing with them, you could argue that Jackson may be their top player. If not, it's Andre Drummond, who's puts up some ridiculous numbers in terms of rebounding, but when your top player is a liability at the end of games, meaning he can't make a free throw, you know, it's kind of like Dwight Howard, kind of like DeAndre Jordan. I just think that complicates.
Kind of like Jakeem Noah.
I think it complicates the ends of games for those teams, right? In terms of, I know Detroit often went with Aaron Baines, who as a backup, but you know, that's a big drop off in terms of what Andre Drummond brings to the table, at least for the first, you know, 46 minutes of a game, right? But the last few minutes, you can't have him in there because of his liability as a free throw shooter. And then beyond those two, Detroit's lineup, they have some solid guys. You know, Caldwell Pope is pretty decent. I think Stanley Johnson is a nice young player and has a pretty solid upside. But I don't think it's an all-star level upside, but you know, as a competent NBA player and a starter. So I've got Detroit slipping a little bit at 41-41. So I see them at the 500 mark.
I agree. You know, I'd like to jump in and make a comment about Drummond. I agree completely. Like, he's at a whole nother level. I mean, he's not even jack bad free throw shooting. You know, this is a guy who's shooting in the 30s and 40s. That is just awful. And it's hard to describe how bad that is. I completely agree with you. You need to live in the gym and at least get up to 60%, 50 or 60%, and that's hardly acceptable. You know, and I just don't understand it, and I never will, how guys can be that horrible from the free throw line. Because in my opinion, all it takes is hard work and repetition and doing it over and over and over again. And I don't think there's any excuse for it, you know. And, you know, Shaq was bad, but this is a whole other level. And I agree with you completely. You can't play him at the end of the game. So how valuable is the guy, really? You know, no matter what else he does on the court.
Right. And kind of like the Pacers last year, I thought Detroit really overachieved. And I think, you know, and I haven't broken down their schedule, but I think the fact that teams like the Bulls and the Wizards were below par last year, a lot of it due to injuries to key players, I think that benefited some teams, you know, sort of on the bubble, I guess you'd say, like the Pacers and Pistons, a playoff bubble or finishing at 500 or better. And so, you know, those teams were both, you know, 4 or 5 games over 500, and I think that that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, well, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt. I'll get into this point with your next team.
Yeah, so the number two slot I've got are Bulls. You know, they were 42-40 last year, and we won't go into all the things we've talked about, you know, exhaustively about injuries and why and so on. But for them to win 42 games with all the games lost by key players, I think there's only, and those injuries aren't going to happen again to that level. I can't imagine it. So I see them getting to 45 wins this year, which is only three more than last year. But I think I'm kind of allowing for some adjustment, development, just like we talked about at the front of this podcast, integrating some of these established veterans with the young guys and finding the right blend and the right guys to have at in end of games and, you know, and just getting the rotation down, because there are a lot of interesting pieces. I think before Denzel sprained his ankle, I heard the announcing, I think it was Stacey King, was saying that it's going to be hard to keep this guy off the floor. So he showed enough, even in that little glimpse of a preseason game. You know, Stacey King's not going to make a comment like that unless he really sees something. And we saw a lot of it in the summer league as well. And even games when Denzel wasn't shooting well, he was a playmaker. And even when he wasn't shooting well, he was willing to take the game-winning shots. So I just think he has whatever that it is that he's going to be, when healthy, you know, be a big contributor early on. It's just, you know, easing him into the system and finding the right time and spot for him.
Agreed completely. And I also feel, you look at the Bulls, their two best players, Butler and Wade, usually the best players on the team kind of lead to what you're going to become. And they're better than any two players in that division, with the exception of, you know, LeBron and whatever.
Irving.
Take your pick. Irving, right, obviously, right? Those two guys are the two guys that are better. But I think the Bulls, you know, even if you're talking Indiana, Butler's right there. And you know, I think the combo of Wade and Butler is better than whatever the rest of the division can bring. So that's usually a good sign, with the exception of Cleveland. You know, so it's usually a good sign.
I agree. And I think there's going to be some addition by subtraction of Rose and Noah being gone. I think just because of the last few years, the number of injuries, you know, there's still things happening with Rose off the court, which I think are a distraction. Obviously, Bulls don't have to worry about it now. But regardless if he's innocent or not, it's a distraction. And he's, you know, having to be at court dates in Los Angeles and things like that. So just the fact that that's not, that dark cloud isn't over the Bulls this season, you know, I think that's going to be a positive. And I think, hey, I'm going to tip my cap to Rose and Noah and all they've given to the Bulls, you know, throughout their careers. But I think, like I mentioned early on in previous podcasts, for them to be able to kind of gracefully get those guys off the roster and pick up who they did, I think is fantastic.
I agree 100%. I don't think they get enough credit for it. I think Noah's done. I think the last 2 years, no one wants to admit this, especially last year in the time that he was healthy, the Bulls weren't any better with him than they were without him. People want to forget that in the games he played, I think they were 500, which is about what they were after he was hurt. For the entire season, it's kind of ludicrous to me, and it ignores the other fact that the Bulls had a ton of injuries from other key players like Butler, and we can go down the list ad nauseum, all the injuries they had last year. But Noah was not a good basketball player last year by any metric. He was terrible. From his field goal percentage, for a center, free throw shooting, he was not a good basketball player. I thought near the end, before he got hurt, he was improving somewhat defensively. But overall, he wasn't good. And he wasn't that good the year before. I think Robin Lopez is going to be an upgrade on the defensive end, which some people I'm sure are going to be shocked at. But, you know, it's unfortunate, because I don't blame it on Noah. I think, you know, he suffered at the hands of Tibbs, and his career is going to be prematurely ended because of it. But I think he's done, and I think I agree with you on Rose. I think Rose is going to have a better year. I think he still has some left in the tank. But talk about a distraction, this entire – I mean, I just flew to L.A. and back, and I know how difficult that is. It's going to be hard for him, and it's going to be hard on the team and answering questions about this. I'm kind of shocked that they haven't been more proactive in trying to solve it and not let it get to this point. But, you know, if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do.
Right, right. Well, and a couple other quick comments, and as we talked about Rose, you know, Rondo is a bit of an X factor just because of, you know, are we going to get who we hope to get in him? I've watched in the preseason, I watched him off the ball defensively, and I liked what I saw from his energy. He's got hands up denying the ball on cutters going through when his guys. So, you know, he's a fabulous player. So I think that even if we have a few little bumps in the road with Rondo, he's going to be more productive than Rose has been. And then you already touched on Lopez being more productive than Noah will be. And Lopez is going to average, I would think, 10 to 12 points a game, which, you know, at this stage of Noah's career, averaging double figures, I think, is really impossible.
Agreed. And Rondo's impressed me. First of all, he looks to be in just fantastic shape. That's one big sign right there. He's ready to play. And I just love the way he handles it. You just see it immediately that this guy's a facilitator as opposed to a scorer. This is a guy who's more interested in getting other guys involved. And I think that's what this team needed. I'm not saying, you know, Rose is not a better basketball player. For this team, Rondo's a better fit. You know, it's clear. So we'll see what happens. I mean, this all could blow up in our face, but I still feel that, you know, these pieces could be easily moved and we could, you know, begin the rebuilding process if that's what happens. If not, we can put the fear of God in Cleveland and have an exciting season. So you got the Bulls at two. We still have to look at number one.
Right. Well, and I don't think Wade and Rondo are going to let it blow up. They didn't come to Chicago to be unsuccessful. Now, there could be things beyond their control in terms of injuries, but, you know, assuming things, there's no catastrophic injuries or something strange happens, you know, those two players are very proven successful winners with championship rings, and you know, they didn't come to Chicago for this to be an experiment or for it to not work. So I'm very confident, and I have a lot of trust, especially in Wade, that he's going to get this thing on a very good course soon. So although that said, we're all looking up to the number one team in the division, and that's Cleveland, and the superhuman LeBron James. So, you know, six finals appearances in a row, you know, very unprecedented. It's certainly in the modern era, although James Jones has been there with him for all of them. So that's kind of the biggest sidekick benefit ever, I think. But good for James Jones that he's been there with LeBron for all of them. But I've got Cleveland about the same as last year. They were 57-25 during the regular season last year, and obviously there was a little bit of a shakeup with the coaching change, which seems like ancient history now, but it was less than a year ago that Blatt was still coaching Cleveland and had the best record in the East, and then
been
fired, and Tyronn Lue took over. So I think there's going to be some continuity benefits with Lue being there from day one, although he's been part of the coaching staff from the beginning since Blatt was there. But I think that continuity and just I think the confidence of winning the title is going to certainly carry over to just how they approach things and their mindset. And I guess my only question is how long can LeBron keep this up? This is, you know, this is really unprecedented in terms of the, you know, for someone his age and mileage as a player to play at this level this long is really mind-boggling.
Great point, Tim. And can I jump in here with a quick question
sure.
for you? Because I was thinking this about I was thinking about this the other day. Who would you say the top five players off the top of your head are in the league?
In the NBA this moment?
Yeah.
Well, obviously LeBron.
Steph Curry.
Steph Curry.
Westbrook. Durant?
Westbrook, Durant, Kawhi Leonard comes to mind.
Kawhi Leonard. All right, I wouldn't have him in the top five, though. I'd still say right away, let's look at the top three. You got Durant, probably Curry, LeBron, right? I think most people would say those are the top three, unless you – what do you think?
Yeah, Westbrook certainly in that conversation, you know. And
On almost any list, those are, probably the four. Think about it. Every one of those guys, and the vast majority of guys in the top ten, if you want to throw a guy like Chris Paul in there, Blake Griffin in there, almost every guy has had at least one season-ending injury, except LeBron James. It's unbelievable how durable this guy has been over the years and not had a season-ending injury. Westbrook had one. Durant had one. Curry had one. You can go up and down the list of these players. It's mind-boggling how healthy this guy has remained throughout the years.
Even a young guy like Kawhi Leonard, who you know, arguably he's certainly in the top 10, maybe not the top five, but he's even missed some time in San Antonio due to injuries, and you know, broke his hand. You know, LeBron's not even had things like that. You know, with Kawhi, it hasn't been anything major like you know knees or back or shoulders or things, you know, things like that. But his durability is again, it just kind of blows my mind.
It is, and to me, that's the odds of him going these many years without one serious injury. Even Jordan had a broken foot in year two. It's astronomical, and that's the only thing that I will point out is the odds of LeBron going through another season without an injury. Of course, I don't want to see him injured. No one wants to see him injured. I don't want to see any player injured. My point is the odds of him going through another year completely healthy are pretty low. It's almost unprecedented that a guy could go this long without an injury. And if LeBron James gets injured, the East is up for grabs because I don't think there's a team that I'd say, do you feel the Cavs without LeBron are a favorite to win the East? I don't. I think any team, I think the Bulls could beat them. I really do. I think, there's several teams in Boston potentially. That's to me, out of all the things that LeBron has done, that's one of the most amazing things, how healthy he's been able to remain. It's a testament to, you know, his greatness as a basketball player, genetic, his hard work. He's just one of the greatest ever, without a doubt. But, just one point I wanted to bring up, that look at the top 10 list one day, and it's amazing how many of those guys ended the season with a season-ending injury, all but this guy. You know, a few, maybe the beard, I think, has been pretty healthy, too.
Yeah, James Harden. Even LeBron's teammates, since they've been in Cleveland, look at Kevin Love with the shoulder and missed most of the playoffs.
Irving? Again.
Kyrie Irving, you know, hurt his knee. And you're right. For players that play at the kind of that breakneck level, like, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Westbrook gets hurt because of how he plays. He plays so fearlessly and recklessly. And LeBron, I'm sure he's dialed it back some and he picks his spots better now that he's had so many years in the league and kind of understands his body and, you know, this is a time where you know, I don't need to play at all, or we don't need to play at my highest level for us to still win. So he probably has gotten a good handle on that, but still, like you said, the odds of him staying healthy this long, playing this hard, that many minutes, I've shaken my head at it and have for years, actually.
Yeah, so you have them coming out winning the Central. What's your prediction for games one?
I have them at 58 wins, so just only one more victory than last year, but I think, I think they will kind of use the Popovich Spurs, method of, resting guys, and, they're not going to go for, winning 73 games or, anything like that, right? I think they're going to kind of manage their roster and manage the season to win the division, but, not go for, some number of victories record or anything like that. So, they certainly could be capable of winning more than 58 games based on LeBron and if he stays healthy. The other thing, though, that aside from that, I don't think they've really upgraded their roster. And, you know, they picked up Dunleavy. They picked up Birdman, you know, Chris Anderson. But, again, those two have had injuries and are older players in the league now as well. You know, they re-signed Richard Jefferson, who rethought his retirement, which, you know, I can't blame them. There's not many jobs that you can collect a paycheck like he's collecting in Cleveland. So, and I thought he played really well in the finals. But there's really no infusion of younger talent there. Obviously, you've got your core of LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson, who are very solid. I think Kyrie is probably poised to carry more of the load now. You know, I think LeBron gladly would allow Kyrie to do a little bit more. And obviously, we've seen how great Kyrie Irving is, and he's certainly capable of doing that. I think Kevin Love is remained a pretty underappreciated player. We've talked about that in the past on the podcast. And then, you know, there's some beauty to Tristan Thompson and the dirty work that he's able to do, doesn't need the ball, and really just has a knack for rebounding, especially on the offensive glass. So I think, you know, that core of players is a tough one to beat, especially in that division.
Tim, it's been great. Fantastic as usual talking to you about basketball. Looking forward to going through some of those other divisions and reviewing the Bulls play throughout this preseason. All the best to you, brother. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Cub game, and really looking forward to talking to you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Have a good one, brother.